Welcome back to the second hour of Guitar Tracks. I'm your host, Brian Tarquin. All right, tonight we got a great interview with Trey Gunn. If you guys are not familiar with him, he's a guitarist who has played with King Crimson. And he plays the Chapman stick. That's a very unique instrument because it's a stringed instrument like a guitar and a bass, but it has both strings. So in other words, it has bass strings and it has guitar strings on it. He explains all about the Chapman stick.
I had some issues with the guitar that it wasn't quite entirely fitting with me, but I had the sense of, like, no matter what I did, I had this kind of shadow of blues playing over me, which I love that, but it just didn't suit me. And I had a bit of a revelation one day when I came across this instrument called the Chapman stick and saw that it was tuned in fifth. And I thought, wow, I wonder if that could be something for me. And I actually was going to buy one. I drove through LA to get one from Emmett Chapman, but he didn't have one. And I ended up meeting the English guitarist Robert Fripp, and he showed a tuning for the guitar based in fifth. And when I put that on my instrument, suddenly the guitar completely transformed for me. I didn't play the Chapman stick for a couple of years, but I switched my guitars over to fifth tunings on my bass, and I've never played in fourth actually since. That was 1985. A couple of years after that, I ended up getting a Chapman stick and playing it, and that's where my whole kind of life has gone ever since. I pretty much, I wouldn't say I've abandoned the guitar and the bass, but I committed to this instrument that's completely a tapped instrument. It has bass strings and guitar strings. A few years after that, I met a guy named Mark War out of L.A. who builds the instruments that I play now that are called War guitars, and still in this purely tapping style instrument. It's got five bass strings and five guitar strings. You know, you play it like you're playing the piano on the fretboard with both hands. When I first picked up the instrument, and the first day I put it on and started playing, I was like, oh, I like hit my head. I was like, oh, this is what I've been trying to do all along on all the wrong instruments, on the bass, kind of playing I wanted to do on guitar, and even kind of the playing that I still dinked around with on the piano, although I never played any keyboards professionally. That's what's kind of interesting about this instrument, is that that's what it was originally invented for. Emmett Chapman originally invented the Chapman stick to kind of, and of course I'm paraphrasing it, to kind of do what a solo piano can do, which you get all these different things going on. And that's what it was made for. You have a set of strings for the bass that you play with your left hand, and you can play bass notes and chords, and then you can play melodies with the right hand on the other set of strings. I never played it like that. That kind of playing isn't that interesting to me. Really, until about a year ago, I kind of found my own way of doing it, which is using a lot of electronics, a lot of the signal processing I do. For me, it was more about having a lot of strings and having both hands there to play anything that you needed. So I play a lot of bass lines. I mean, all the bass lines I play, I use both my hands to share the lines. And the same with the guitar soloing and the chording. I just use both hands. I don't really think, oh, this hand is the melody hand, this hand is the bass hand. But yeah, technically the instrument has enough strings and you have enough fingers that you can accompany yourself. You can be the whole band if you want.
Trey was very fortunate to run into Robert Fripp and also take lessons from him. And that's how he got turned on to this special tuning system that Robert came up with in fifths.
You know, when I look back now, there was kind of a couple of years where all this was swirling around. Meeting Robert the spring, summer of 1985, and that's where he showed us this tuning, which he hadn't even spent any time with. He just kind of had a revelation about this fifth bass tuning starting on the low C below the E on the electric guitar. I think he'd done one session with it, but he just made the leap and said, this is the way to go. I'm going to do this. And he showed that to us, and we all put it on our instruments and were completely blown away. And for me, that totally changed the instrument. You can't play any kind of blues licks convincingly at all in the fifth tuning. It just doesn't sound right. You sound like a dork. The regular guitar tuning, it's so idiomatic to play. Your hands just, it's just sitting there. And with the fifth, you can kind of fudge it, but it's just not the same thing. It's not the same thing, which is fine for me because my voice is tuned slightly differently. And then a few years after knowing Robert, I started playing the Chapman stick, and he invited me to be in a group with his wife. That was called Sunday All of the World, as a Chapman stick player, as kind of the bass player. A lot of the ways that this instrument and the current instrument I play, the war guitar, kind of functions in a band is it normally functions as the bass instrument with all this extra action. So that's kind of how I play it in a lot of projects. I'm the bass player, But then I've got this other hand with another five strings. I can use completely different sounds on the other set of strings, and I can add colors and solos. If I'm lucky enough to be functioning in a group where somebody else can function as the bass for a moment, like I have a group with the King Crimson drummer Pat Mastellotto and this insane accordion player from Finland called K2. Kimo can, on the accordion, because he's got a MIDI accordion, he can go down into the bass register. If I'm in a group like that, then I can leave the bass completely behind, jump up to the guitar strings, and do full-on crazy soloing or whatever I want with both hands up there, which for me is the ultimate.
Now, by this point, Trey and Robert have been working a lot together. So when Robert Fripp decided to put King Crimson together again in the early 90s, he, of course, asked Trey to join.
I mean, I've been working with Robert in so many contexts, and we spent a couple of years working with this English musician, David Sylvian, and did a couple of records with David, a live record and a studio record. And then after that, Robert really was feeling the urge to start up Crimson again after basically a 10-year break. And the configuration that he put together was what is known as the double trio with two drummers, Bill Bruford and Pat Mastellotto, two stick players, Tony Levin and myself, and then two guitar players, Adrian Blue and Robert. The whole thing was really very complicated bit of orchestration. I think Tony did as well. I mean, we all really loved the challenge of it, because normally in a rock context, the instruments themselves kind of define the area that they can play in. So the bass player is never going to get in the way of the guitar players, really, and the drums do the drums, and kind of everybody's in their own area, and you just take care of your own turf. But with this band, there's too much sound right from the start. What do you do with two kick drums? Where do you put two kick drums in a mix from two different drummers, you know? And then the same thing with Tony. You can't have two bass players. I mean, you could, and actually we came up with some ideas later on. If you did a live recording and just had a stereo pair in the room and the basses were hard left and right, you could do that. But really, you kind of needed to define the function of instruments. And we kind of relished in that for a while, which is really orchestrating this heavy, essentially an electronic rock ensemble, but it had to be really orchestrated. So, you know, in this 8-bar section, okay, you're going to go down in the low end and I'm going to go on the high end. Here's a 16-bar section. Now you're going to go up high and I'm going to go below, or you're going to sit out, or I'm going to take the bass line from you. Or, you know, eventually we started working with, you're taking the downbeats and I'm taking the upbeat. So there's all sorts of ways to do it, but you still have to consider that it has to sound good. Robert has put out this giant 16-disc box set of the Thrak record, including 5.1 surround sound remixes, which I don't have a 5.1 player, so I haven't heard it yet, but I hear it's phenomenal, because what they did was they mixed the drums up and down the left and right side, so one drummer's on the right side and one drummer's on the left side. It's not a, you know, it's not a normal 5.1 where the band's in the front and the ambience in the back. The band is all around you. I just really was not aware of the band until the Discipline record. That record and Mahavishnu's Vision of the Emerald Beyond, those were the two records that blew my head off in 1980. So that's the Crimson that I know. Then we had a period of a couple of years where we just did completely improvised shows, not with the whole six-piece, but little groups that Robert called fractals of the different trios, kind of opened up to the next Crimson, which was just the four-piece with Pat, myself, Robert, and Adrian. And we did a couple of records for that, the Construction of Light and the Power to Believe. Pretty much when Crimson signed to Virgin Records in 94, I think, I can't quite remember, Robert started his own label, Discipline Records, or Discipline Global Mobile, and it's been kind of the backbone. It pretty much was, to my understanding, the first label that let the musicians own their own music. It didn't ask the musicians to sign over the recordings to the label. That Robert just thought that was unethical. We were able to release a lot of things at a smaller level that we couldn't put out on the big labels. So, you know, I think in my time of 10 years of Crimson, I think there's like 70 live recordings, even though we've made 4 studio records. But tons of live recordings, because of course the band is really a live band. It's when the fire takes off, and there's a lot of improvisational aspects, especially with the four piece with Pat and I, with the Power to Believe Crimson. we would change things a lot from week to week. We would kind of rewrite the rhythm section parts or add different stuff.
Of course, I knew Trey from the Thrack album that he had released with King Crimson, but really turned me on to his playing was John Paul Jones had a solo record called Zuma, and he was featured on one of the songs called B-Fingers.
When I met John, we were sharing a similar manager with Crimson, and when I was working with David Sylvian, he had kind of a crazy vision of how to use my instrument in a way that I was just beginning to explore, which is completely as this kind of thrashing, almost punky lead soloing thing. I had done just a little bit of it, and, you know, John really wanted to have a trio with me and him. And so the way it's kind of started was him making this solo record called Zuma. And basically, I just came in and did a couple of solos. Like, wow, he got some really cool stuff out of me that I had never done before. And then it ended up not working out with me being in the touring group because I was touring so much with King Crimson. But he found a friend of mine, Nick Beggs, who also plays this instrument, and they toured a lot. John, he is the unsung hero of Led Zeppelin. There's no question. He is the musician of that band. You know, when I met him and heard him play piano and heard him play pedal steel and slide, and the other guys were great, no doubt. You know, Jimmy is great, but John is freaking alive with just music pouring out of him and orchestration and, oh my God. He joked to me a couple of times that they did a performance without him. I think they did the song Kashmir, and he's like, it took like 18 guys to replace me. They had to have the bass player. They had to have a keyboard player. They had to have a whole orchestra because, of course, he orchestrated and conducted the orchestra. I feel bummed not being there, but at least I have the satisfaction to know it took 18 guys to replace me. But, you know, he has done so many cool things over the years. You know, he's worked with so many unusual things from the Butthole Surfers to Diamond Galas. He's had a rich, rich musical life.
Trey explains some of the new projects he's working on. One that he's very excited about is called The Security Project, which is remakes of all the early Peter Gabriel solo records.
I have this project called The Security Project with Jerry Murata, who's a really outstanding drummer who I've worked with before. Jerry was the drummer in Peter Gabriel's band for like the first five records. We have put this band together that we are doing the old solo Peter Gabriel music from the first four records, basically, before Peter became the superstar with a solo record. It's a crazy project, and originally neither Jerry and I really wanted to do it. Or it just sounded like a crazy idea. Like, why would you do that? And could you even do it? Because Peter's music from the third and fourth records, particularly, are known as really obscurely strange sounding music, and nobody plays it. We thought, well, Peter doesn't even play a lot of this material. I wonder if we could do it. And we found a singer who sings unbelievably like Peter. We've done a couple of East Coast tours, little club tours, and then some shows in Europe. People have been so blown away, for one, to be able to hear the music, but also just how, to be honest, how well we play it and how seriously we take it. I thought we could never make a recording because it would just seem like you'd rather just listen to the original. But what we've done is we've kind of taken some of the material and really infused it with our own kind of vision, taking almost Peter's recordings as like a score and kind of reinterpreted some of it. We've ended up putting together a live recording, which is just coming out in a couple of weeks, just called Live One. I tell you what, you guys go listen to it. It sounds freaking amazing. So that's what we're working on. And we have a West Coast tour starting in about 3 weeks, going from Seattle down through San Francisco and L.A. and San Diego. And you can find it on our website, Security Project Band. And then in October, we'll be back on the East Coast. I do some solo performing. I have a very unique and obscure way that I use technology with my instrument to do a whole solo performance. And I do that occasionally. I haven't been touring that. It's just kind of when it comes up. And then I have two other touring things. One is this project I mentioned with the Finnish accordion player K2. And we don't do many shows, but we do a few shows each year. And this year we're going to Romania and doing a couple of festivals there. And then I have a duo with Pat Mezzolato, the Crimson drummer. We have a duo called Two. We don't actually do that many shows every year either, but we do a few. As soon as I finish the Security Project tour, we're going to go down to Mexico and South America. And it's a really cool group because it's just two guys, drums and electronics, and then my instrument, and we use a lot of crazy visuals and stuff, but it's half improvised, or maybe it's like three quarters improvised and then the rest composed. And with two guys, you can go anywhere. The music just can run wherever you want to take it.
It was very interesting talking to Trey because I never really explored that instrument, the Chapman stick. So here he is now on B Fingers by John Paul Jones on Zuma.